Well, hey friends, welcome to the Everyday Mealmanship Podcast. I'm Ty Evans. Thanks for listening. I hope you are doing awesome wherever you are in this amazing world. In this episode, this is episode 192, we're going to talk about weanling season. And I talk about mistakes that I have made raising weanlings, working with weanlings, and I talk about things that I'm doing now that I think are best practices. And who knows, maybe, you know, I record another episode a few years down the road and it might be totally different suggestions, but I'm sharing what I know at this time in my education, and I hope you find these things interesting. As always, I would sure appreciate it if you would rate and review this episode and this podcast. Tell us what you think. We love hearing your feedback. Leave a review, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. I also need to thank our sponsors for this episode. We got Boyd Ranch Mule Days. It's coming up here in March. Every year, we just are always excited for Mule Days. It's the best, you guys. If you want to have family fun, you want to have a good time, want some good food, want to do some great trail riding out there, come on out to Mule Days. They are awesome. Scott Stewart, Lisa Taka, all the folks involved at Boyd Ranch Mule Days, they will take dang sure good care of you. And I'm doing a clinic this year again. Glad to come back. My buddy Chris Clark, you've heard him here on the podcast. He's doing a clinic there also with packing. So come ride with me. Come pack with Chris. Come trail ride. Come eat. Come hang out. Come play. But you gotta check out Boyd Ranch Mule Days, especially if you've never been there. You gotta come. Also want to thank Kevin Wright over there with Diamond W Enterprises, raising some good mules. If you're looking for a good weanling, that's what we're talking about in this podcast. You're looking for a good jack to breed to, you dang sure got to look up Diamond W. They do a great job, really do. Also, big thanks to Western Mule Magazine and Mules and More Magazine. Both these magazines have been supporters of this podcast from the beginning, and I am so grateful to both of them. You need to read them both. They're both amazing publications representing the mule for sure. And as always, if you want a good saddle, look up Colt Saddlery. He does a good job, builds great gear. Also got to give a shout out to my buddy Ben Lewis at Roman Homes. If you're looking for a good wall tent, right now we're in the midst of hunting season. A lot of elk hunters out there, deer hunters out there, a lot of people hunting here, especially in Utah. And man, it feels good after a long day freezing your butt off to come back to your wall tent, fire up that wood stove and enjoy the evening. So hey, with that, we will hop into this episode. Here we go. So I just got in from feeding my mules this morning. It's a kind of a crisp, cold, just a little gentle flakes of snow coming down type of day here in Utah. Fall has come and gone. The leaves are off the trees pretty much, and it's starting to feel a little bit more like winter than fall. And you know, this morning I went out and fed the mules, and then we got a new little weanling named Nifty. She comes from a good friend of ours in Iowa, Jan Sanford, and she did a wonderful job raising this baby. And anyways, I've had this little weanling in a big pen, next to our even bigger paddock where the whole herd is for the last couple of weeks. And this morning I decided to turn Nifty out and, turned her out there. And it's so fun to watch them when you finally turn them out with the herd. She's out there bucking and kicking and running around. She feels pretty good. You know, these crisp mornings are kind of hard on us humans. We don't do so good when it's 20, 30 degrees out. But man, the mules love it. It's like they feel so good. You know, their best, you know, temperature, you know, what 70 degrees is to most of us humans, about 42 degrees Fahrenheit is to the mules. They love it. They feel so good. That's when their body operates the best, feels the best. And it dang sure shows. When I turned Nifty out this morning, oh yeah, heads up, running around. You know, she's just feeling good, bucking and kicking and playing around. And And I thought, you know, I better, I should do a episode on weanlings. And so since this is weanling season, I've been getting a whole bunch of emails, messages, and questions about weanlings and what do you do with them? Like, what do you work on? You know, what, do you just turn them out with the herd? Do you keep them by themselves? What kind of work should you be doing? Groundwork? What do you do? And so I thought, hey, this is a good opportunity to talk about that. And I sat out there for about 45 minutes this morning, just watching Nifty out there playing and bucking and kicking and having fun while the other mules ate. And I thought even that might be something worth sharing, is how I go about introducing the mule to the herd. So I'll get to that, but let me just tell you about our experiences with these babies and how it's changed over the years. So my dad definitely liked to raise babies, and I remember growing up, you know, it seemed like there was always youngsters around. My dad liked the young ones. He likes the babies, likes the colts, likes all that stage. So, you know, he raised quite a few, and that was fun growing up and being around that. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that I didn't pay a lot of attention to really what my dad did, you know, raising them up. And, you know, the only thing I remember a lot of, I guess, is he always was playing with them, and he got his hands on them quite a bit. And he was good at getting them gentle. Now, fast forward to my life with Sky, and you know what we've done. You know, we've primarily bought weanlings. We bought all ages, but of course, but with the babies, we've bought a lot of weanlings, and I've done different things over the years that I think has been good, and different things that I don't like. And I kind of want to share some of those things with you. Some of the things that I don't like, I'll start with that. Some things I wouldn't recommend doing that you see recommended a lot. And that is keeping the babies, when you get these weanlings, keeping them completely isolated from other animals. And I see people's reasonings, and I know my reasonings. I thought, you know, well, geez, I want the mule to kind of get hooked on me and like me and blah, 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 whatever. Okay. That's just not reality. I've learned the hard way. I've done that. And what I've learned by keeping these weanlings isolated away from the other herd completely and just with you basically in their own corral by themselves is, it makes for absolutely herd bound, like lack of confidence, weak minded mules. They are not, they just don't get comfortable easily. They're always on edge. They're bothered all the time. So I highly recommend that you do not keep them by themselves. You know, something else that I've done that I regret, that I wouldn't do anymore, is just get these babies so handled and pet all over them and so dull to our signals. In the beginning, it seems like this is a really good thing to do. And now don't get me wrong, I definitely want my mules gentle, and I definitely want to be able to touch them all over, pick up their feet. You know, they shouldn't be scared of my hand touching them. On the other side of the coin, though, I don't want them so handled and so dull that when I give them a signal or I ask them to move or I ask them to go somewhere, that it means nothing. And I've done that to a few of them, to where they're just so stinking gentle that now they're dull. And now I got to sharpen them up. In order to sharpen them up, it seems like you got to do a whole lot of firming up. And it seems like it kind of damages the relationship, so to speak, where the mule's like, well, what the heck? I thought you and I were just good old pals here, and now you're driving me pretty hard. So I like to set the standard earlier. Something else that I've done in the past that I do not recommend is on, now this is for particularly the wild, the little bit wilder ones, is leave a halter and lead rope on. Don't do this. I've learned my own lessons. This is dumb. And remember, I'm here to save you time. Leaving the halter and lead rope on, for one, is a great way to get one hurt. These colts, these babies, these weanlings, they're injury prone anyways. But you leave a halter and lead rope on, and you are just asking for it. I've seen so many of them, and I've had it happen to my babies. Rope burns. They get that lead rope wrapped around a leg. They got a lame mule out there, rope burned real bad. And you can get them rope burned so dang bad that it can damage their future, for sure. You can really do some damage. I've seen them stick a hind leg in that halter. If you didn't realize it, they can dang sure itch their ears with their hind leg. And they do, just like a dog, it seems like. And man, they can get a hoof stuck in there, damage stuff, get hurt. I mean, there's so much risk. But let me tell you, besides the health risk, okay, besides that, leaving the halter and lead rope on, you miss out on one huge important aspect that will last a lifetime if you do it right, and that's getting them ready to catch. Leaving the halter and lead rope on basically puts you, and you got to hang in here with me while I explain this, but it basically puts you in a frame of mind that you're kind of on the predator instinct. You're thinking, just get them caught. Just get them. If I can just get close enough to snatch that lead rope, and that's what you do. And I've done the same thing. Just snatch that lead rope up, get a hold of them. Now you got them. Now they can't get away. And then you use your brute strength to overpower them. And it doesn't take a lot of strength to overpower some of these weanlings. I mean, you don't have to be like, you know, like some bodybuilder, you know, some muscle man to get this done. It doesn't take a lot of strength to hold one. Okay. So by leaving that halter and lead rope on and just snatching them like that, you're missing out on the aspect of getting that weanling ready to catch. And we've talked about getting them ready to catch in multiple episodes. We've talked about it. I got all kinds of videos on the video library about it. But this is crucial. In that beginning stage as a weanling, focus on getting them ready to catch. And believe me, it's tempting when you have a wild one to want to just leave something on them so it's easier to get a hold of them. But that's not the point. Getting a hold of the mule is the byproduct of having them ready to catch. Because here's the deal. If I get them ready to catch and I do a good job of teaching them how to present themselves to be caught, teaching them to get comfortable being caught, then catching is not a problem. It's just put the halter on. Anybody can put a halter on. Like it's not a big challenging thing. You can just do it if they're willingly standing, waiting, and they're okay with you approaching them and all that. Then it's just fine. It's not a big deal. But the predator inside of us kicks in, and we want to catch them. We got to get a hold of them. So that's another mistake. Is leaving that halter and lead rope on. Don't do it. Don't do it. Avoid that. The other mistake that I've made is not doing anything with the babies. You know, I've gone the other way to where, okay, yeah, on one side I did too much and I got them dull and like just absolutely so sticky that they don't do anything. They're just a big old dog. On the other hand, I've made the mistake of not doing anything. They've just pretty much ran wild. Now, not necessarily wild as in the wild, but I mean, they're just out there in my herd, and I pretty much ignore them, don't do anything with them until they're older. Well, and now I got a mule that is very watchy, very snorty, bothered. It's, and that doesn't fit my program. You know, the type of mule that I'm trying to raise and produce here, it needs to, number one, fit my family. At my stage in life, you know, Sky and I, we have two daughters, Ellie and Swayze, and they are just about 11 and 9. They're almost 11 and 9 now. They're just little kids. And we're trying to cultivate a love for riding and a love for being around these animals. And let's face it, it's really hard for a little kid to enjoy being around a mule that is snorty and doesn't want to be pet, doesn't want to be loved on, doesn't want to be around you, is scared of humans. It takes a unique child to be interested in a mule like that. And let's just face it, most kids aren't. Also, there's just too much risk. Like, the average person should not have a mule that has that much risk, where if you scare the mule, the risk of getting kicked or ran over or whatever is pretty high with a mule like that. So you might think, well, I'm just not going to touch it because I don't want to. And this is another thing I've heard a lot, and hopefully you don't say it, but if you do, stop. And that's, well, I just didn't do anything with it because I didn't want to mess it up. All right, well, that's your first mistake. You already messed it up. Do something. Get them gentle, but just not dull, okay? I want them sensitive, but not flighty also. So here, these are just some mistakes that I'm just sharing with you. So, and I'm going to get into the stuff I do now, or just in a moment here. But one other thing that I wish I would have done so much more of on so many weanlings is handle their feet. You know, a lot of them, I just say, oh, I'm not going to worry about it a whole lot. And, you know, some of the places that we've lived and some of the pastures and paddocks and things have been so rocky that, you know, really you don't have to trim them much. It would be good if they were balanced. But these days I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a few mules that I'm trying to correct because they weren't cared for a lot as babies, and, you know, they grew out of balance and a little funky and a little weird, and they kind of got bad feet because of it. And gosh, you just kick yourself in the butt. So I handle their feet a lot. So with that, let me talk about what I like at this point. And maybe I make a podcast 5 years from now and it'll probably sound different than this, but this is what I really like. Okay. So, number one, pick a good breeder. And yes, it's important, the bloodlines and the type of mules they are creating. You know, what's the quality of the jack? What's the quality of the mares? But also, you need to consider that breeder's education on making a future mule. You know, what do they understand about making the ultimate riding mule? What do they know? You know, what's their standard? What are they looking for? And I say that because I do know a lot of breeders that they just breed babies and they don't ride really. They don't really, you know, they're really not horsemen or mule men or women. That they're not into it. They just raise babies and sell them kind of like a calf crop type of deal. All right. Well, the risk of that is, you know, a lot of things that I just told you and things I'm about to tell you, they're not going to be doing, or they are doing. They don't understand what the future of this animal is going to turn out like. So you consider, what type of standard of riding does the breeder have? Because this is going to help you or hinder you. You know, if they ride a lot, they know what they want. They know, okay, I should have these things gentle. Now, I want the breeder to get their hands on this baby as quick as they can. If they can be there when it's born, that is great. I really appreciate that person. And I know it doesn't fit everybody. There's a lot of people that I do know, I have a lot of friends that, you know, they prefer them not touched at all. Okay, I get that. But I just set this up and told you the standard I'm looking for in my life. I got a family, I got little kids. I'm not looking for bronky mules right now, this point in my life. I'm also trying to raise student mules, mules that people can come here to my ranch, my place, and ride here. And let's face it, I got to have them gentle. So from the beginning, I need these mules gentle, and I want their interactions with humans to be positive from the beginning. So if we can time it and the breeder can be there when this baby is born, Oh man, that's so good. Get your hands on them, be around them. It's so good. I got a friend of mine, Chris French, that actually Sky's dad just bought a baby from him. And, you know, something that he does a lot of is he'll once he weans these babies off the mothers, and even when they're on the mother, he will catch the babies and go tie them up for a short time every day, you know, and they're learning. And they're among their pals, their other weanlings there. They're all together. It's not like they're by themselves. And they kind of learn how to be tied up a little bit. And they're getting that interaction of being caught by Chris every day, you know, when he works. They're getting handled like that. And it's just basic stuff. You know, there's really not a lot to do from the point they're born to when they're weaned other than just be around them. If you can get your hands on them, pet them, just basically make good experiences with that baby as often as you can. I want the interactions with humans to be positive. I don't want negative interactions with humans. Okay. So that's what we're working for. What's really great is if they can have some experience loading on a trailer before they're weaned. Like, so you got the mother, you lead it onto the trailer, that baby's going to just follow, hop right in, no big deal. And you do that often to where, okay, the trailer is now not a big stimulus. It's not a big deal to be in the trailer. It's not scary. It's not a thing at all. It's no big deal. And then when it comes time to load in the trailer by themselves, we only change one thing at a time. We just take away the mom. Now it's just the baby going in the trailer. It's pretty easy stuff when you just change little pieces at a time like that. So those are some good things. You know, if the breeder can handle those feet. See, the baby is the most comfortable when it's going to be with its mom. Like that point in life, when it's with mom, mom's comfortable, mom's taking care of it. You can do so many things. You can pick up those feet. You can get your hands on them, get your fingers in their mouth, you know, all that kind of stuff. Rub their ears and even clip their mane, which if you've been around me much, you know, I like a roached mane for sure. Brush them. I mean, all that kind of stuff. Do that with mom around. And mom is basically that comforting source. So these little things that you do aren't that big of a deal. And then later on, the thing that changes is mom is gone. But because they've had introductions to these things, it's really no big deal. It's just fine. So those are some things that help. Now, from the time that I get them and on, let's talk about that a little bit. So when I go to pick up the babies, I want their first experience to me to be positive as well. Keeping in mind that you right here, right now, you do need to set your standard. So something that happens a lot, and don't be surprised, but these babies, you know, when they find comfort with their moms, they'll lean against their moms. So I see this a lot. When the baby's kind of scared or nervous, it will go side up to the mother. And yeah, maybe you can pick its feet up, but it's leaning against mom. Okay. Now you wean it. And we wean them, you know, unnaturally. If they're naturally weaned, you know, the mom will drive them off at some point. The mom will say, okay, baby, you're done. You know, get out of here. You know, you don't get to lean on me anymore. This is done. And the mom will drive them, bite them even, kick them even, drive them off, and will wean them off, especially, most especially, if they're due to have another foal. That mom says, listen, I got another one on the way. You got to get out. And she'll kick them out. But since we wean them unnaturally, we pull them off the mares on our own, on our timeline, then they go from leaning against mom to now they're leaning against us. And you got to watch out for this. This happens so easy. And when they're little babies and they lean up against you, you think, oh my gosh, he loves me. He's so cute. And you go to petting on him and you think it's the greatest thing ever. The problem is that thing is going to grow up. So that first interaction, when I pick up that baby, I want to make sure that it knows that I am not going to be something for it to lean on. It can find comfort near me, not on me, not against me, but near me. And so you got to set that standard. And it's pretty easy because you think it's so darn cute and you let it side up to you. But you really got to watch out for that. From that point, when I get the baby home, I have a big corral next to my paddock where all the mules run together. And it's close to the feed bunks. It's close to the feeders and the water. And so basically, if I put the baby in that pen, it is right next to the whole herd a good part of the day. But some of the day, the mules will wander off and might even be out of sight of this baby a little bit. But they'll come back throughout the day to water, grab some hay, whatever. And so that baby's going to get a lot of interaction over the fence. Even though it can't reach over the fence, the panel's higher than the baby can reach, of course, but they get that interaction and that introduction to my whole herd through the fence that way. And by doing that, it kind of saves the baby some heartache of getting bit and kicked and driven around because, you know, talking about mistakes earlier, another mistake I used to make is I'd get them home and I'd just turn them out with the herd. Like brand new, you just got weaned, turn you out with the herd, and those other mules and horses would run that baby ragged, beat it up, kick it. Knock on wood, I never had one get hurt that way, but there's such a high risk of it that now I don't do that. Now I get them home, and I keep them in a big corral right next to the whole herd. So they're getting their introductions for a couple weeks over the fence, and like Nifty, the baby I was talking about earlier in the episode, this morning I turned her out. Well, she's been in that corral for, I guess, about 2 weeks. Something like that, week and a half, 2 weeks. And, just getting that introduction over the fence. So she's not alone, you know, isolated, which I already told you was a mistake, but she's also protected. She's not with the herd getting her butt kicked. And what I have done over the past couple weeks since we've had her here is I will periodically just throw another mule in there with her. So I've pretty much introduced, I haven't introduced all of them. That'd take a long time. But I've introduced a handful of them, just putting them in the pen with her and let them interact that way, kind of one or two at a time. And that seems to help quite a bit. And this also makes for a mule that's not so dang herd-bound and not so dang needy. And speaking of that, if you can wait longer to wean them off, if they can be just a little older before they're weaned, it seems like they are so much less herd-bound. If you wean them too early, every mule that I've, all these babies that I've raised that have been weaned early definitely seem to be more herd-bound and worried and higher stress levels than the ones that have been weaned later. And I'm sure there's some cool science into that. We could probably dive into that. I'm not the scientist. Maybe one of these days I can get some experts on to talk about that. But I think there's definitely, it seems like if they have more serotonin, and we know that we get serotonin from those interactions with each other, from feeling comfortable with each other. The baby gets more serotonin with its mother. Maybe having that built up, and when they're weaned later on, because of that higher levels of serotonin, they are less likely to be so stressed. So I'm sure there's some cool correlation there. But definitely, if I can help them along so they're not, you know, so darn stressed, you know, and stress is not a bad thing. I want to introduce stress to them, but in measured little increments. Now, it's definitely stressful leaving their mothers. Then it's stressful leaving that farm. Then it's stressful the trailer, the ride here. Then it's stressful, you know, being introduced to another herd. So if I can mitigate each piece of that and make it a smoother process, it seems like these babies, you know, just get along so much better, and, you know, it's not so hard on them. So yeah, I'll kind of keep them in this pen for a couple of weeks next to the herd, and then I introduce them to the herd. And from there, you know, I get the question, well, what are you doing with them now? And how often do you work them? So let me give you a handful of things that I'll do with my weanlings. So one of the things that I will start doing at this point, okay, they're, let's just say they're 6-7 months old at this point, is I will start catching them and tying them on the high line. But now you be careful with this, not alone. I don't want them to be alone on the high line. So I'll always have other herd mates there with them. And how long do I tie them on the high line? Well, I can't say exactly, but it dang sure is not all day long. And it's not hours either. It might just be for 20, 30 minutes on the high line, and then I'll put them back. And I've been doing this the last few years with these weanlings more and more, and it just does such a good job, because that high line kind of teaches them how to lead. And I will not tie them to, if they've never been tied, especially, I will not tie them to like a hitch rail or the trailer. I put them on the high line because I want them to have that freedom of movement. I want them to be able to walk forward. I want the high line to pick up on them, roll their hindquarters around. They walk back, it picks up on them again, rolls the hinds the other way maybe. And I want them to learn to find the slack in the rein above them. And this is going to help me so much in the future with my riding. It's just incredible. The differences, and I wish you could all experience this, because you're just going to have to take my word for it. But you know me, I'm kind of a mad scientist. I'm always trying to experiment. I promise you, there's a big difference in mules that have learned how to tie on a high line versus mules that have learned to be tied at a hitching rail or a horse trailer. When it comes to riding, a huge difference. Holy cow. It's amazing. It's like the ones that have been on a high line. It's so easy. You just pick up on that rein when you're riding, and they kind of know how to respond to it. Now it's not exact, and it's not exactly the same. There's a little different feel to it, obviously, but you get the point. There's a difference in highline mules and hitch and rail and trailer mules, I promise you. And so, you know, you're going to have to experiment with that yourself to get a feel of it, but there's dang sure a difference. It seems like the ones that are on the high line, they know how to respond to that rein, whereas the ones at the hitch and rail, there is no response. There's no feel laterally, left and right. They don't know what it means. So I found that very interesting. So that's something that I'll do quite a bit of. Now, I've gone back and forth. Some mules, before I ever put them on the high line, I do a little groundwork. Now, the groundwork I do with the weanlings is so simple. Primarily, it's clearing the front. If you don't know what that is, go watch it on the video library. Clearing the front. That's when I'll send them to the left or to the right on a loose rein. And so I'll do that, make some circles, roll the hinds. That's pretty much all I'll do for the first few months. And I've experimented. I've had some that I've done the groundwork before putting on the high line, and I've had some that I put on the high line first. These days, if you're asking me today, right now, what I prefer putting them on the high line first, and then, you know, a few weeks of that, and then I will start to gently add this groundwork process. And basically, their whole weanling year, I'm working on, like I just said, clear the front, make a circle or two, roll the hinds, and eventually I'll get to roll the hinds and stop, and roll the hinds, roll the front. That's the basic list. Their weanling year. You know, and in their yearling time, you know, that's something for another episode. I'll get into some more of the advanced groundwork pieces and things like that. But with these weanlings, it's just short little sessions. So even if I get out there and I do some groundwork, I'm talking like 5 minutes, 10 minutes maximum. Just real short, real sweet. And as soon as, between the highline work and the groundwork, as soon as that mule understands that lead rope and understands how to operate on that slack rein, then I'm going to start leading it around everywhere. And, you know, we have about 30 acres here in Spring City, and it's just a bunch of juniper trees. And so I'll take them out there just on walks. I'll be on my feet, and I'll just kind of go for a walk out there for just 5-10 minutes, no big deal, and kind of lead them around. And I just work on that, basically going and stopping, and that's about it. And then if I can, I'll pony them off of another mule, and that gets to be real good, and that makes, you know, for a great experience, especially if they lack a little confidence. This helps them because they borrow the confidence off the other mule. So I'll do a bit of that. You know, so besides the high line and the groundwork and the leading and the ponying, you know, I'm clipping their manes about once a month. So they're getting constant familiarization with the clippers. I am trying to pick up their feet every time I handle them. Every time I handle the mules, I'll try to pick up their feet. And I'm probably running a rasp over them about once a month. You know, I really don't have to use my nippers much unless, you know, I miss a month or two. I don't have to use those nippers a whole lot that weanling time. I'm just running a rasp over them. And that's a great experience for them. They're feeling that. They're feeling the vibration of that. They're hearing the noise. And I just do a little bit. I'm not trying to make them stand on their feet, you know, 3 feet for a long time while I work on a foot. It's just a short, you know, 15, 20 second burst of rasping, put the foot down, let them balance, all that kind of stuff. I'm getting them used to a flag too. I use my flag, I use my rope, just stuff like this. Remember, I want to keep them sensitive. I don't want them to be dull. So I make sure these days that I don't overdo any stimulus to where it doesn't, you know, basically doesn't cause movement. So I will work to get them quiet, like say with the rope, but then I'll use the rope again to cause movement. So I'm going back and forth, getting them calm with something, but then also stimulating with that same item, that same thing. And this seems to be real good. You know, overall, how often am I working with these weanlings? You know, seriously, probably once a week. Like that's when I'm home. You know, my scheduling is probably different than most of you because, you know, I'm on the road about 9 months a year. And now it's not nine, you know, months straight of being gone. But if you put all the time together, it's about 9 months I'm gone. And about 3 months I'm home. So you take that 3 months I'm home and sprinkle it throughout the year. All right. You know, I'm probably not even getting once a week, but when I am home, I would say, you know, like right now I'm home for another week and I'll probably play with that baby once or twice this week before I go to Australia. And, you know, when I get back in December, I'm home pretty much, you know, 3 weeks of December. And so I'll probably work a few times there. And, you know, anyways, you kind of get the point, but I don't need to work with these babies every day. I don't need to do that. The herd is also going to teach the weanlings a ton of stuff. The herd is so valuable. It's probably your best tool, really, because those other mules, they're not going to let that baby come side up to them and lean on them. They're going to kick and drive it off, which is exactly what you want to have happen. You want them to be independent. Also, they need the herd interaction. These are herd animals. So I just have noticed better health. You know, a lot of these weanlings going into their yearling year, they look kind of weird and gangly, and weight can definitely be an issue. It seems like pretty much every yearling has a hard time putting on weight. You know, and I think if you can keep them with the herd and minimize the stress they have, they'll put on the weight easier. They won't have so much stress in them, and they'll eat healthy and be able to relax, get to sleep, all the things that we need, you know, and especially things we needed when we were children. You know, kids got to sleep a lot. It's no different for these weanlings. They need to get lots of sleep if you want them to grow healthy and be healthy. So anyways, that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's a lot of little things that we could talk about and add in here. You know, I start stressing more about the trailering and getting them better about that as time goes on, but it's not really ever a big deal. You know, I start ponying them out on the mountain, out on the trails more into their yearling year. But basically as weanlings, it's what I've talked about, and letting them just kind of grow up and be in the herd. And above all, though, I want to just say this again. I said it in the beginning, you know, when I was talking about leaving the halter on. Don't do that. If you can, if the only thing you do, seriously, if the only thing you do their weanling year before they turn a year old is approach them and you get them ready to be caught, and we have videos on this if you want to see it. You get them ready to be caught. Maybe you don't even actually put the halter on. You just get them ready to be caught. If that's all you do, that is worth your time. That is something that I would focus a lot on, the weanling year. That's something that's very important to me. So hopefully, if that's all you can do, hey, you're okay. That's just fine. So anyways, these are just some thoughts on weanling season, since we're in the middle of it right now, this fall. I'd love to hear from you. And if you have other questions about your weanlings and your youngsters, you know, you can send me an email anytime, ty@tsmules.com, and I'm happy to help you out. I would love it if you would rate and review this episode, especially if you listen on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the word out there. We're trying to help more people. We're trying to help more mules. So please share this episode and tell us what you like. So, hey, thanks for listening. God bless you, and we will see you down the road.